Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
To the left hand side for Vieira, who'll play through to Gabriel Jesus, who's in here for Arsenal. Gabriel Jesus to finish it off. Oh, what a way to do it! Gabriel Jesus seals the points for Arsenal. He's back, and he's back with a bang.
Into the penalty area it goes. Gabriel header, and it's into the back of the net. Arsenal take an early lead through Gabriel.
Listening to the Chronicles of Aguna, the daily Arsenal podcast with me, Harry Simeon.
Hey everybody, how's it going? Welcome back to another live edition of the Chronicles of Aguna podcast, coming to you live around about 10 minutes after the full-time whistle at Bramall Lane, where Arsenal have hit Sheffield United for six. Arsenal are on fire. The Gunners are absolutely flying. And this was one of those fixtures, right, where you kind of looked at Arsenal's running and you went, right, you have to win that, you have to win that, you have to win that. There was a fair few that we needed. Look, we need to win a lot of them, I would say most of them, but there's a fair few that you looked at and you said to yourself, these should be givens, right? These should be straightforward victories. Sheffield United is one of those because of how poor they've been this season, because it's clear that there's a huge gulf in class between these two sides. But as my day went on today and people were saying, oh, I don't know why you're even turning up to that one. I mean, obviously I didn't go, but people were saying, you know, I don't know why you're even concerned or even in the slightest bit interested in that fixture. Arsenal going to win 6-7-8-0. The more of that I heard throughout the day, the more nervous I started to get about this fixture. And why on earth did I feel nervous? I think it's because I want it so much. I want Arsenal to win the league so damn much. More than the Champions League? Probably not. But I am desperate to see Arsenal win one of those big two trophies this season, because I think we've done such a good job over the last few years of turning the fortunes of the club around, of assembling a really young, hungry, talented and likeable group. And I just want them to have the icing on the cake. I just want them to have something, an achievement that would, you know, that would crown that off, that would make sure that they have written their own story, that they have got their own place in Arsenal's history, rather than just being a good team that didn't go on and win anything of note. Hope you're all good. Hope you're all well. Thank you all for joining me. I know it's pretty late night here in the UK, coming up to around about 10 past 10 in the evening. So thank you for choosing to take in some post-match analysis here rather than anywhere else. I really, really do appreciate it. Let me say a few hellos to some of you joining us in the live chat before we dive into it, because there is lots to unpack as always. Big hello to Tupop, who says, absolutely great win, keeping the pace and getting players back. Damien Kelly, I think, is joking when he says that was really boring. JK Bio says, fuming we didn't get seven. what else have we got in the live chat? Big hello to Jamie. Snipe.genius is with us. We've got Tang03, who's watching live for the first time. Good evening to you, my friend. Welcome. We've got Richie. We've got N17 Gunner, who says, Sheffield United are crap, the end. Yeah, look, I think it's important that we put this caveat in nice and early at the top of the show. Sheffield United are not a very good football team by Premier League standards. That is clear. They might be the worst football team ever to play in the Premier League. You know, that's a possibility. I think they're that bad. And although Arsenal were brilliant, and we'll talk about the start in a minute, the fact that Sheffield United just crumbled the way that they did at home was worrying if you're a Sheffield United fan. You know, I want to give all the praise to Arsenal. That's what I want to do. This is an Arsenal podcast. But it would be wrong of me to dismiss how bad Sheffield United are. And although you can only beat what's in front of you, and Arsenal certainly did that tonight and deserve tons and tons of praise for that. And as I say, that's what we're going to be doing on this episode. If I ignored the fact that Sheffield United are terrible, I wouldn't be being fair in my analysis. Adair joins us. He says, cheery to the Chronicles fam and H. Long time since I caught a live one. Good to see you in the live chat. We've got Ed Benjamin, who joins us from Maryland in the US, says, what a game. Sheer ruthlessness. It really was in that first half, wasn't it? It was brilliant. It was fantastic. Let's start off from the very, very beginning then, because there were some suggestions that Mikel Arteta might make some changes tonight. There was talk about the possibility of Gabriel Jesus coming back into the starting lineup. Of course, he returned to the squad for the recent game against Newcastle United, but wasn't used that evening. Didn't need to be, really. And when he's had an ongoing knee issue, there probably was a feeling that there was no need to take any unnecessary risk with him that day, as we've discussed previously. And in the end, Arsenal, kept him fresh for tonight's game. But Mikel Arteta decided to stick with the same team. And I like that. I like continuity. I like this idea of not changing a winning team. And I think, look, there will be games where you will change a winning team and you will tinker a little bit because you think that tactically there is something that maybe your opponent offers that you need to adjust to. Mikel Arteta was talking pre this game about the need to adjust yourselves at times in terms of figuring out what is the best way of hurting your opponent. But Sheffield United are so bad, with all due respect, that you don't need to pay them respect. You don't need to be sitting there on the training ground trying to figure out intricate and sort of elaborate ways of disrupting them, because the truth is they're not much of a threat, and defensively they're really, really poor. We've seen them crumble like this on a number of occasions this season. I'm pretty sure they lost to Newcastle. I think it was 8-0. They were down, I think, 4 or 5-0 at halftime at home to Aston Villa not so long ago. And of course, this happened again to them tonight. So while I always say it's the Premier League and you should always be wary and you should always be mindful and you should always guard against complacency, there are some teams that you just don't need to adjust for. And Sheffield United are one of those sides. Bramall Lane was a place that in years gone by, I used to fear going to. You know, I used to look at those Sheffield United sides and think, not always the most talented, but certainly always very committed. It's a place that can generate a cracking atmosphere. I actually travelled up to Bramall Lane during Unai Emery's tenure, and I think we lost 1-0, and it was a really shit night. And yeah, like, and I saw Bramall Lane at its best, where, you know, the fans were all on side. It was blood and thunder from Sheffield United. It was physical. It was, you know, that kind of thing. They tried to rough us up a little bit and they succeeded. They did a really good job of it. And I look at the way they are now, and obviously, you know, they're nowhere near that level and they're a really, really weak side. But, you know, sometimes when I don't know about you guys, but I always get a feeling in a game quite early. Now, your feeling isn't always 100% right, because there are things in the game that can happen that can dictate the result and the outcome, et cetera, et cetera. But I normally get a feeling in a game 4, 5, maybe 6, 7 minutes in as to whether or not Arsenal are on it and if everything's going to click. And today, tonight, I really, really got that feeling. From the minute we kicked off, every pass was sharp, was accurate. People's touches were good. The movement was good. The energy levels were high. And I'd been moaning, actually, over the last few days about the fact that we had to wait to play on Monday night when Liverpool played on Saturday, City played on Sunday. And I feel that playing last in a title race is more often than not a big disadvantage. Now, obviously, it kind of flips the other way now, because we've played tonight, we've closed the gap on those two teams at the top of the table. And then we play again, of course, against Brentford on Saturday. So there is a possibility that Arsenal will end up top before Sunday comes around. So it does work both ways. I get that. But like, there was a part of me that thought we might go to Bramall Lane, and although we're much, much better than them, the pressure of having watched those two sides win at the weekend, and especially in Liverpool's case, where you know, it was really, really kind of deflating and difficult to swallow, even as an Arsenal fan, because, you know, they probably shouldn't have won that game. And they ended up doing so. There was a real clear refereeing error in the build-up to that goal, which Nottingham Forest were not happy about, et cetera, et cetera. And then Manchester City go behind in the derby, and you think maybe, just maybe, there's an opportunity here. You know, if they can drop some points, and it didn't happen. And so, as I say, I woke up this morning quite deflated. And the more I heard people saying Arsenal are going to go and trounce Sheffield United by 6 or 7 goals, the more I started to think, hold on a minute, this might not be that straightforward. But from the first 2 minutes, I felt like Arsenal were not only going to win, but we're going to win handsomely. The zip, the tempo with which we played, the quality that was on show. And again, quality shines brighter, doesn't it, when you're playing against weaker opposition? No question about that. But I just, we just seemed bang on it. And when we seem bang on it, there's very, very few teams that can live with us. So the lineup was Raya in goal, White, Saliba, Gabriel and Kivior across the back. Still no Zinchenko or Tomiyasu available. Odegaard, Jorginho and Rice with the midfield trio, with Thomas Partey returning to the bench. Saka, Havertz and Martinelli played up top. And I looked at Arsenal's bench before this game and I thought it looked a lot stronger, at least from an offensive standpoint, from the midfield beyond. In terms of midfield options, Thomas Partey being back is huge. For what it's worth, I thought he looked really rusty and I thought he looked out of sorts. He gave the ball away, I think, with his first touch and just didn't look like he had that half a yard. But it's understandable. The guy's been out for a long, long time. And it's going to take a while to get him back up to speed and anywhere near his best. And, you know, I was kind of looking at it and thinking, you know, when he comes back, you know, maybe we go to the Etihad, and I know I'm thinking a little bit further down the line here, and we play Partey, Rice and Odegaard. That would be great. But that depends on how quickly we can get Partey up to speed, because based on what I saw tonight, Thomas Partey is still quite a way off of his peak condition. But as I say, the midfield looked positive. Partey an option, Smith Rowe an option, Fabio Vieira an option. If you go into the wide areas and the attacking positions, Nelson on the bench, okay, not the greatest option, but a decent enough third choice attacking option to go to on the bench. Trossard and Jesus, brilliant stuff. You know, the squad is starting to come together again. The only position I believe now that we're a little bit short is, of course, in that back line. But I take you back to the starting lineup, and it was about using Havertz as a kind of false nine and having him sort of hold the ball up at times, having him, you know, run in behind at times, having him run channels, having him just really, really connected to everybody else in the team. Jorginho being in the midfield took the shackles off of Rice. And again, that comes from being up against a side that, with all due respect, you don't have to have that much respect for. Declan Rice was far more adventurous. And of course, he got his goal, which was great. Look, it took Arsenal just 5 minutes to break the deadlock in this one. Martin Odegaard with a tidy finish after a good piece of play down the left-hand side. Nice little dummy from Kai Havertz as well, which allowed the ball to run through to Odegaard. Then Bogle scores an own goal on 13 minutes after some really good work from Saka down that right-hand side. I was watching Austin Trusty tonight, and like, I know, again, I keep saying it, Sheffield United are not a very good football team, but I look at Austin Trusty and I just think, what on earth possessed us at any point to sign that guy? I remember at the time we did, I remember doing a podcast and saying something along the lines of, well, he's coming from a club that is also part of the Kroenke's empire. And this is clearly some kind of like PR move or something. Because from a footballing perspective, I just couldn't see how on earth this made sense. And he went on loan to Birmingham and he done okay. But tonight you saw that Austin Trusty is certainly not an Arsenal standard player. Just 2 minutes after Bogle's own goal, Martinelli added a third. His deflected effort found its way into the back of the net and Arsenal were cruising. Sheffield United supporters were leaving after 15 minutes. We've got this incredible run at the moment of going to away grounds and basically scaring off the home crowd even before half time. And then, of course, 10 minutes after that, on 25 minutes, it was a really tidy finish, really good finish. After a foul on Martinelli, Havertz picked up the ball and started approaching it from the left-hand side and just drove it low across the goalkeeper. Brilliant, brilliant finish. His confidence is on the increase, it's clear to see. And 6 minutes before the break, Declan Rice popped up to make it 5-0. 5-0 at the break. And that made Arsenal, or put Arsenal in a position where they'd scored 5 goals away from home in 3 consecutive Premier League games. Now, that is not bad for a team with no striker. Brilliant, brilliant piece of trivia that. Just, we're on a wonderful, wonderful run. So, there we are, 6-0 win, nice and comfortable. Let's have a quick look at what that means for the Premier League table. Then we'll start talking about some individuals and individual performances. Arsenal now in third place still, of course, but 6 points clear of Aston Villa in fourth. Just the 1 point behind Manchester City in second, and just 2 points behind Liverpool, who lead the way. But of course, those two sides meet on Sunday at Anfield. That is going to be a really, really fascinating game. What do we want there? I'd be happy with a draw, because if we win against Burnley at the weekend and move on to 64 points and those two sides draw, we will stay top going into the next round of games. Now, of course, Arsenal then don't play for a weekend. I don't think City or Liverpool do either because of their participation in the FA Cup. But going top and sort of leapfrogging them at this point, would it add pressure to us, the fact that we would be the ones being chased? Or would it be a psychological win for Arsenal, given that for most of the season, we've been playing catch-up and people have been saying we're not good enough? I just wonder if, because we're kind of riding on the crest of a wave at the moment in terms of our confidence and in terms of sort of the run that we're on, I think it might be a really good thing, actually, to be able to just leapfrog those two, even if it is temporarily, just to show and build that bit of confidence that, you know what, we are as good as these teams, if not better at the moment, currently anyway, on form. And we'll see how that works out. Of course, we'll see how that pans out. But the goal difference thing could be huge come the end of the season. You know, we're talking about one of the tightest title races in years, and Arsenal's goal difference is a whole 10 better than Manchester City's now. You know, it's a whole 6 better than Liverpool's. So, yeah, those things can turn around. We've managed to turn ours around quite quickly. But it's obviously something that we kind of have now on our side and in our favour. And hopefully we can maintain that moving forward. I'll start with, when I'm talking about individual performances, I do want to start with Arsenal's captain, Martin Odegaard, because I thought tonight he was sensational. I'm going to do player ratings a little bit later on, but I just thought that Martin Odegaard was out of this world tonight. I thought he did everything to perfection. Some of his passes, his movement, his energy levels, the way he was pressing from the front, all of it was so, so impressive. He made us tick tonight. Richie in the chat says, Magic Martin. It's a great way of putting it. I think he was outstanding. And I feel like in the last few weeks, you know, post the kind of winter getaway, we've started to see the best of Martin Odegaard again. I wondered whether it was a system thing or if it was a kind of personal form thing where he kind of dropped off a little bit. And I think it was probably a bit of both. I think there was a little bit of an adaptation period for Martin Odegaard that maybe people didn't want to acknowledge was a thing because of the way we're now playing with two really adventurous eights and the requirement for somebody like Odegaard to kind of drop into deeper areas at times. And then maybe it takes him a bit longer to get up into that final third. I think we made adjustments around Odegaard to try and get the best out of him again. One of those things was, particularly with Kivior playing at left back, is pushing Ben White into that midfield position, into that inverted role, which means that Odegaard doesn't have to come as deep, and instead he can lead the press and try and make a difference that way. I think that is a thing, and I think that's a really, really interesting sort of point and something that probably needs to be analysed a little bit further, and maybe I'll do that over the next couple of days. Another player I was really impressed with, again, was Jorginho in midfield, particularly in the early exchanges. Like, every ball that was pinged into him was then pinged into somewhere really useful, into space, through a line, into... it was always kind of horizontal, vertical stuff all the time from Jorginho, and often with a first touch, which I thought was just a joy to watch. He was really, really brilliant, setting the tone, setting the rhythm in the first period. Martinelli was really effective tonight as well, which was great to see. I think at times people have said that he is a little bit wasteful and that he's failed to hit the heights that he did last season. And he got a bit of fortune with his goal, of course, because the ball took a deflection on its way through. But generally, I thought he had a really, really good game. And one of the only negatives of tonight is that Gabriel Martinelli had to limp off with an injury. Now, I read some people online trying to kind of figure out exactly what that injury is. A lot of people said that they think it might be a metatarsal. Do you remember there was a point where metatarsal injuries were just this big thing that was happening to everybody? I remember Wayne Rooney did one, didn't he? And a couple of other high profile players. I hope it's not serious. It looked more impact than anything else, which I think is a good thing in the long term. You know, sometimes those ones, they can be a little bit sore, a little bit difficult to kind of continue with, but you know, it's generally better to pick up one of those, you know, assuming there isn't any major damage, than it is to twist something or to pull something or to tear something. So I'm hopeful that that's all it is. What I am a little bit concerned about, and I'm sure that Mikel Arteta will address this, of course, you know, in the post-match stuff, and we are live on this podcast now. So if we do hear about it while we are on the show, please, guys, do drop it in the chat and let me know. Keep me updated. Keep me posted. I'm hoping that there's no issue for Bukayo Saka and that he was just taken off at halftime to protect him. Maybe there was a slight feeling of something. Maybe there was a slight issue. Yeah, that would, you know, that would be much, much better, of course, than us losing a key player to any sort of problem. Hassan Mirza says, and I haven't seen this myself yet, but while we're live on the pod, he says, Arteta just said that Saka wasn't feeling well and that Gabby was just a cut. Okay. Well, if it's a cut, he's going to get over that. If Bukayo Saka's not feeling well, we wish him all the best, and I'm sure he'll be back very, very soon. So yeah, that's kind of positive news, I guess. I feel much better about all of that stuff now. Another player I want to talk about is Kai Havertz. Yes, Kai Havertz. You know that guy that I've been telling you all to have some patience with? You know that guy that I've been telling you will turn out to be a really, really good signing? You know that guy I've been saying Mikel Arteta knew what he was doing when he decided to go out and push the boat out on him? Well, he's coming good now, isn't he? Because every week now he is contributing in big, big ways. And he's impacting games, not just with goals, but with his movement, with clever assists, whether that be laying the ball off for somebody like he did for Ben White after a beautiful piece of control, whether it be taking a shot on himself from, you know, just outside the penalty box and driving it across the face of the goal, whether it be his involvement in the Martin Odegaard goal, where he makes that movement across the near post, takes someone with him and opens the corridor for somebody else to step in and score. Kai Havertz has come good, guys. And for me, you know, this whole chat about whether it was a good signing or not, we're now at the point where it needs to stop. And I felt like we were at this point a little while ago, but some people still insisted that this be a debate, that this be a thing. But Kai Havertz has proven himself in Arsenal colours. Now, he's got to maintain this and he's got to continue to do it over a far longer period of time before we're going to say what a masterstroke, what a bit of genius. But I really do believe that the variety that he brings to our game and the particular skill set that he has makes us a far more unpredictable attacking unit. And I look at it and I think, why did people ever doubt it? Now, I was a big supporter of the idea of bringing in Havertz, and, you know, not everybody will believe me. So I've got the clips, don't worry. And I will roll them out at some point. But when I did a podcast last summer, before we even heard that Arsenal were interested in him, I said that I would take a gamble on Kai Havertz. I didn't want to pay £65 million, admittedly, but I said he'd be a good buy and someone that I'd like to see play under Mikel Arteta, because I really, really thought he would suit us in a good way. In he's come. Not only has he covered us in the left eight position for large periods this season when we've been without Partey, meaning that Rice has had to play the six, when Fabio Vieira has been unavailable, which has been for a long time, when Emil Smith-Rowe has been unavailable, he's also been able to go up front and have a massive, massive impact, a far bigger impact than Eddie Nketiah could have. And he's helped us out in that position too. The guy's attitude is fantastic. His work rate is clear for all to see. His intelligence is superb. And he's just playing with a bit of a swagger at the moment. And that comes with confidence. The confidence is building and he's getting better and better and better with every passing week. I'm really, really enjoying watching Kai Havertz at the moment. Some people will tell you that Martin Odegaard was the man of the match tonight. And if you think Martin Odegaard was the man of the match, I'm okay with that, because I think he's got a really, really strong case. And I know Sky gave him the man of the match. But my man of the match tonight was Kai Havertz because of his all-round game. He just brought so, so much to the table tonight. And it was really, really great to see it all coming to the fore. Look, Arsenal were completely dominant, 81% of the possession, 22 attempts at goal, 10 of which were on target, 6 goals to show for it as well. You know, we're in a really, really place at the moment. We're in a really, really good place. Guys, if you haven't done so already, please do leave a like on the video. It really, really does help. Please subscribe to the channel if you're brand spanking new as well. That really, really does help. And if you're listening on the audio platforms, please do leave us a review. I'm going to take a short pause. When I come back, I'm going to run through my player ratings. Once we've done that, I'm going to spend the rest of the time taking your questions and your thoughts from the live chat box. Keep them coming in. The chat is popping off at the moment. In fact, before I take that pause and then we dive into the player ratings, there is someone that I want to talk about, and that is Emile Smith-Rowe. Now, I say that I want to focus on the positives, and I do predominantly, but I do want to talk about Emile Smith-Rowe because I've felt for a long time that perhaps the writing's been on the wall for Emile Smith-Rowe. And I know a lot of Arsenal fans don't want to accept that because they, you know, have an affiliation to him. They feel connected to him. He's a player that's come through Arsenal's academy, and he's a player who, you know, not so long ago we were tying down to a new contract that we were all really excited about. And we were watching him being presented with the number 10 shirt, an iconic shirt at Arsenal Football Club. But I think I'm at the point now where it's becoming more and more difficult to deny that the writing's on the wall for Emile Smith-Rowe, because tonight, Mikel Arteta made 5 substitutions in a game that was won by halftime. Cedric Suarez came on, Thomas Partey came on, Leandro Trossard came on, Fabio Vieira came on, and Gabriel Jesus came on. But still no Emile Smith-Rowe. Now, I know some people will argue, well, there were certain players that he wanted to rest. For argument's sake, Ben White. You're not going to bring Emile Smith-Rowe on to play at right back, right? You're not going to bring him on to play on the left wing. Well, you could, I suppose, but I think it was always the plan to get Gabby Jesus on. Maybe they didn't account for having to make the Saka change, but rather than bringing on Emile Smith-Rowe, he chose to bring on Fabio Vieira. And even with 15 minutes to go, when Declan Rice came off and Arsenal had sort of sat Partey in the midfield and then were going to play with a couple of eights, he still chose Leandro Trossard over Emile Smith-Rowe. So what kind of future does this guy have at the football club? What is it that just isn't working at the moment? Is Arteta yet to be convinced by his fitness levels? Is it an attitude thing? Is he not applying himself in training in the way that some of the others are? Is he not showing as much hunger? I can't put my foot on what the problem is with Emile Smith Rowe. But it's becoming clearer and clearer from week to week. When you look at how far he is down the pecking order in terms of who comes on in game situations, like, I just don't see how he has a future. And I actually think, taking all of that into consideration, if we don't sell him in the summer, we'd be silly, because he's a homegrown player. The money goes straight onto the books as pure profit, as people say. And although I don't really want to lose him, if he is this far down the pecking order and a decent offer comes in, then you've got to, haven't you? You've got to take that money. It's a tough one, but I really do feel like that is kind of where we're headed with the Emile Smith Rowe and Arsenal story. Okay, let me know your thoughts on that. Let me know your thoughts on the game in general. Going to take a really short pause. When we come back, we'll also do some player ratings as well. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to the Chronicles of a Gooner podcast. Where's my little sting? Here we go.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Welcome back along to the show. Okay, player ratings time, and I'm going to write these down as well so I don't forget them. Let's start with David Raya. Look, didn't have anything to do, did he? He made one really good save, actually, David Raya, in the first half, although the player was in an offside position. The flag went up eventually, but David Raya wasn't to know that. I thought he made a good stop in that instance, and I thought that everything he did quite calmly, actually. I liked the fact that tonight, David Raya was so sort of big on the idea of making sure that he got the clean sheet, despite Arsenal having sort of run away with the match, that there were times where, you know, maybe Arteta would have preferred him to play out from the back, but it was kind of like safety first. I'm not taking any chances here. We don't need to lure anybody out. We're 5-0 up, for God's sake. I'm just going to clear it long and go up towards somebody like Kai Havertz. And again, circling back to Kai Havertz, that's what it gives you, doesn't he? That option to go that little bit longer and that little bit more direct. So I'm going to give Raya a 7.5. I thought everything he did it well, but there wasn't that much that he needed to do, really. Ben White, I'm going to give him an 8. I thought he defended really, really well, as he generally does, but obviously scored a really good goal as well. Saliba, I'm going to give him a 7.5 out of 10, not because he was bad, but again, you know, limited in what he actually had to do. And I'll give the same to Gabriel. Jakub Kivior, I'm going to give Kivior a 7. Now, I think Kivior has got better with each passing week. I really do. I think he's settling in at Arsenal, and I think he's started to find his feet. But at times, the quality of his passing tonight just wasn't quite there. So for me, he gets a 7. That's my defensive player ratings. Moving into the midfield, let's start with Jorginho. He can have an 8 for me. Some excellent passing, which I mentioned in the first half. It was a real joy to watch. Declan Rice, I'm going to give him an 8.5. Outstanding, as he always is, but also got a goal and got into the box on a few occasions and was maybe unlucky that a couple of other things didn't break his way. Odegaard, for me, was out of this world tonight. He gets a 9.5. And then moving into the front line, Saka, I'll give him an 8 because he was really difficult to play against in that first period, but he only played a half, of course. Martinelli, I'm going to give an 8 as well. And Havertz is going to get my man of the match. And you know what? I'm going to give him a 10. You know I don't give 10s out very often. You know I don't give 10s out very easily. But Kai Havertz, to me, tonight, did everything. He defended from the front. He scored a really good goal. He facilitated a couple of other goals. One with a direct assist, one with a kind of ghost assist, if you want to call it that. I just think he was magnificent from start to finish. And it was the complete performance from your false nine, if you like. So Kai Havertz gets my 10 out of 10 rating. And as I say, you know, I don't give those out often. In terms of the subs, I'll talk about the subs. I'm not going to give them ratings. Fabio Vieira looked okay. A little bit rusty, as you'd expect, but he looked okay to me. Thomas Partey and Gabriel Jesus came on at the same time, along with Cedric Suarez. Let's start with Gabby Jesus. He was desperate, wasn't he? Absolutely desperate to have an impact, but it didn't really happen for him. It didn't really work out for him. And sometimes you can try too hard. I really do believe that as a football player. If I take it on to Partey, I thought he looked slow. I think he looked out of sorts. I think he looked a little bit uncomfortable, actually, despite being back in the position that we know, you know, he's made a reputation in. I'm not worried about it. I'm not concerned by it, because I think it is purely down to the fact that he's been out so long. And I do think that maybe a lot of us got just a little bit carried away with this idea of Partey coming back, and maybe overlooked the fact that he wouldn't be at his brilliant best straight away. When you're out for that amount of time, it is often going to take you a little while to find your feet and get back in stride. The problem is that we've got two massive games coming up. Brentford in the league, which I wouldn't start him in because he doesn't look anywhere near ready to start. And then Porto in the Champions League, which is not a game that you want to mess about with. And it's not a game that you throw him into if you don't think that he's up to it yet. I kind of wish that we had another game in between, you know, the Porto game and the Man City game. We don't have that now because of the way the fixture schedule has worked out. And I'm probably going to say that, although I'd have said a few weeks ago, if you told me that Partey was going to return tonight, that I'd want him in the side for City, at this moment in time, unless I see a significant improvement in his fitness levels, in his performance levels, and that's only going to come with minutes, I wouldn't play him in that game, which I'd have never said 5-6 weeks ago, because I kind of got carried away and maybe overexcited by this idea of having him back and having the midfield I've dreamed of seeing all season. But he's just not quite at that level at this moment in time. That is the truth. Trossard is Trossard. Not really much to say on that. You know, we know what he's all about. Let's take some of your questions then. I think it's time to do a bit of that. Get them in the live chat box. Chuck your questions in. Put a Q at the beginning. It helps me to pick them out, and we'll do a few of those before I leave you on this Monday night. What a lovely Monday evening it's been. Okay, welcome back. Let's see what you guys have got for me in the live chat. Let's take some of your comments. Richie, just on that, on the partnership with Rice and Partey, says we want it so bad, but he's just not fit. You're absolutely right. You're spot on. We all want to see it, and we all know that in certain games, that's probably the best way to go. But unfortunately, based on what we're seeing right now, it just isn't fit enough to for that to be a reality right away. You know, I'm just trying to find these Mikel Arteta comments on Saka on X while we're live. Here it is. Kaya Kainak has just put it out. Saka was feeling a bit sick. As well, we had to give Fabio Vieira some minutes. We had a little issue with Gabriel Martinelli as well. He had a cut on his foot. So, yeah. Okay. Makes me feel a little bit better now that I've read it there as well. Yeah. Anyway. Okay. What else have we got? Moss is coming over for the Brentford game. Mr. Moss, I might not be working on Saturday's game. I might just be going as a fan. If I am, I'll give you a shout, because that means that I can go for a drink or whatever before or after, which makes a change for me. So, yeah, I'll keep you posted on that. Maybe a start for Jorginho versus Brentford when Moss is there, Harry. Finally, the pro midfield. It might be down the line. I don't think you're going to see the pro midfield, which is the Partey, Rice, Odegaard midfield this weekend, though. I still think it's too soon. Okay. Mark Onwuka says, don't you think it's better Liverpool beat City, considering Liverpool will inevitably drop points due to injury? See, if you'd have asked me a few weeks ago, I'd have said yes, but are they going to inevitably drop points? Because they keep bloody winning. Like, I keep looking at them and thinking, yeah, this is the week. Like, the Forest game the other day, it was 90 minutes and I saw that the score was 0-0 and I thought, maybe, because I was at Fulham Brighton, so I tried to avoid it as much as possible. And it was 0-0 on 90 minutes and I thought, maybe they're going to drop points. 97 minutes, I look again and it's still 0-0 and I thought, you know what, this might happen. And they still bloody won it. The jammy buggers. So I'm not sure I agree that they're inevitably going to drop points. Actually, it concerns me that despite all their injuries, they're still picking up these points. Hassan says, do you think Jesus will start the next game or the Champions League game? I don't see there as being any valid reason as to why Mikel Arteta should change it now. Like, if this is a meritocracy, these guys are turning up week in, week out, and they've scored fives and sixes and fours. And, you know, then there's no reason, in my opinion, five against Crystal Palace, if you want to go back a bit further. You know, five against Palace, there was six against West Ham, five against Burnley, four against Newcastle, and another six here tonight. I don't think there's any reason to change that up. I really don't. I know Jesus has got a good record in the Champions League, and we might need him at some point in that game. But to start him would be, given that I don't think he's 100% fit, I think would almost be a little bit disrespectful to the likes of Havertz and Trossard, who have done really, really well in playing in that role between them in recent weeks. Afsar, just going back on the Emile Smith Rowe thing, says, do you think Arteta wants to sell Emile Smith Rowe, therefore isn't wanting to risk any injuries? In my opinion, we should sell and cash in. I'm not saying that his mind is totally made up, but as I say, it feels like the writing is on the wall for him. It really, really does. Jamie says, Havertz has scored more goals, more non-penalty goals than Rashford and Palmer. What does your head say about us winning the league, not your heart? My head says we've got a chance. My head all throughout last year said we had a chance as well, but never thought that we were ever the favourites. And I mean that. That's not me being revisionist. I remember going on lots of radio shows and sort of with my guys at 90 Min and having people say to me, come on, just admit it, you're going to win the league. And I never would because I never really believed that we were going to get over those really kind of difficult hurdles that were to come. And we didn't manage to do it and we ended up crumbling in the end. So I still don't make us favourites. And I don't think I ever will, really, while City are in the equation. And maybe I shouldn't say this. Maybe I am being a little bit excitable and perhaps I'm jumping the gun a little bit, but I certainly think we've got as good a chance as Liverpool, who currently sit top of the table, if not slightly better one, because I think you know, we're in a really, really good place at the moment. Sasha Brady says, do you think we're better with White having the more free role than Zinchenko due to his defensive responsibilities and athleticism, or is it just a novelty? I don't think anybody is better at stepping into the midfield and progressing the ball from a fullback position in this squad than Zinchenko. Zinchenko lacks defensively, though, and that's where we sometimes get exposed. Ben White is a better athlete. Ben White is bigger, more powerful, more physical, and he's more switched on defensively. And so when Ben White does it, he probably is in a better position to get back into the right spaces quicker than Zinchenko is. But I would argue that Ben White doesn't give you as much on the ball as Zinchenko does. So it's kind of swings and roundabouts. I think there will be games at home against low blocks, weaker sides, with all due respect, that Zinchenko is the key when it comes to unlocking them. I just think Ben White in a game where it's a little bit more balanced probably brings you a bit more balance in that situation. But yeah, is he the ball progressor that Zinchenko is? No, I think he can do the job, Ben White. But he's not Zinchenko on the ball, in my opinion. What else have we got? Cesar says, does it concern you that all these players are coming back from injury at the same time and that might disrupt the rhythm of the current starting 11? That's on the manager. To me, that's on the manager to make sure that the rhythm isn't disrupted. Like, these guys come back to fitness and become options and become a part of your squad and are available, but none of them have a divine right to walk into a starting 11 that is performing at this level week in, week out. So I understand what you're saying, but I would hope that the manager is not naive enough to be you know, sort of suckered into making unnecessary changes as a result of those guys coming back. The 11, as it is performing exceptionally well. And it should stay the same way, in my opinion, until something major changes or until, you know, we feel like maybe it's gone a little bit stale, which can happen as well. Goon Gang says Havertz's value is only visible to true connoisseurs. Agree with that. Ivan says, would you have preferred to see Ramsdale in since he has to play against Brentford, praying he doesn't have a howler? Do you know, I completely forgot that Aaron Ramsdale has to play against Brentford. Completely forgot. No, I trust Aaron Ramsdale to come in. I think we got the best second choice goalkeeper in the league. I really do. And I think that Mikel Arteta wanted to have two great goalkeepers, felt that, you know, that would put the squad in a much better place. And I know that people didn't agree with the way it went down. I do think over time, he's been proven right, because look at our defensive metrics and record. And Raya is a contributor to that. But no, I wouldn't have changed the team tonight in anticipation of that. No, I think that he's done the right thing. Sticking with his number one, sticking with, you know, the continuity and all of that. And yeah, Ramsdale comes in at the weekend and we just have to trust that he'll do a good job. And I'm sure he will. Okay. I'm going to take one or two more. After Saka came off, you could see how short we are. Whilst I'd love to sign a top centre forward, is there perhaps a strong argument that another tricky, quick, left-footed right winger is needed more? Look, I think that in an ideal world, if Saka was unavailable, I'd go with Havertz up front. I'd play Martinelli left and I'd play Jesus from the right. I really, really would. But there was obviously a plan, judging by Mikel Arteta's post-match comments. There was obviously a plan to give Fabio Vieira a set amount of minutes as they continue to build him back up. And there was probably a limit with regards to how many minutes they wanted to give Jesus. And so when Saka's not feeling well at halftime, Vieira coming on makes sense. I don't think Vieira's ahead of Jesus in the pecking order to replace Saka. I don't even think he's ahead of Reece Nelson. I think this was just a case of trying to give a specific player a number of minutes to kind of build him back up to the level that we want to see him at. So I wouldn't read into that too much. I think, you know, it wasn't the most like-for-like replacement. It was bringing on someone that needs minutes in a game that you've already won. And if it disrupts you a little bit and impacts the balance a little bit, given the game state, does it really matter? I think that's how Mikel and Arsenal would have looked at it. Moss says, if Martinelli is hurt for Brentford, would you go Jesus or Fabio Vieira or Nelson or Trossard out on the left wing? If Martinelli's not available, I would go either Jesus or Trossard on the left wing. But I think Trossard is fitter at the moment, so I'd probably go Trossard left, Havertz through the middle, and Saka on the right is probably what I would do. That would be me. Okay. What else have we got? Let's take this one from the British Bushman, who says, did anyone notice Jesus at the final whistle looking a little bit dejected and being coached by Jorginho? We must keep him this summer. Thoughts? I don't know. I think he was a little bit disappointed that he didn't score. I think when you come on as a striker in a game that's that open and, you know, where there's been that many goals and you don't get in on the act, there is going to be an element of frustration, isn't there? I just think right now with Jesus, it's about fitness. It's about making sure that he doesn't suffer another setback. And perhaps, you know, Jorginho was kind of trying to make that point to him. You know, it doesn't matter that you didn't get on the score sheet. It doesn't matter that you didn't, you know, you didn't put one into the top corner or whatever. It's about the fact that you've come through, you know, another period of time. You've come through another 25 plus minutes of football without your knee playing up. And that's what this is all about, really. So, yeah. I think we're getting people back at the right time, but I think maybe tonight, if I'm trying to find, look, it was all positive tonight, but if there was one takeaway where maybe, you know, I'm now feeling not concerned, but if there was one takeaway from tonight that maybe isn't really positive, actually, let me rephrase it this way. Let me put it this way. Perhaps although we won 6-0 and were really comfortable and everything was great, tonight was a bit of let me say this again because I'm mixing up my words. Despite everything being great, a 6-0 victory on the road against Sheffield United, putting Arsenal right back in the mix, closing the gap on City, closing the gap on Liverpool, and adding to our goal difference once again. Perhaps tonight also served as a bit of a reality check with regards to some of the players that are coming back. You know, we've been sitting there for weeks waiting for some of these names to reappear on team sheets, for them to be reintegrated into matchday squads. But perhaps this was a bit of a reality check just to remind us that when you've been out for a long time, you're not going to come back in peak condition. And it will take a bit of time to build these players back up to the level that we know they're capable of. Jesus isn't quite there yet. Still, I think you could see that tonight. Thomas Partey feels a long way off at the minute, judging by his sort of cameo appearance tonight. And Fabio Vieira isn't quite there yet either. So it's great to have them back in name, but we need them back in terms of the best versions of themselves. And we just don't have that right now. So we need to temper those expectations with regards to how much of an impact those guys can have in the next few weeks. Perhaps you're going to see them come to the fore after that long old break that we're going to have between Porto and Manchester City. Because right now, fitness-wise, they're just a little bit short, in my opinion. Anyway, guys, I am going to leave it there. Thank you so, so much for joining me on this Monday night. Always appreciate you guys joining on a late night one. We've had nearly 4,000 of you tune in live over the course of this stream, which is really, really incredible. If I could just ask, if you haven't done so already, please, guys, leave a like on the video. It really, really does help. We've only got 177 likes on the board. Given how many of you are with us, there's no reason why we shouldn't be, you know, in the fours, fives, six hundreds. So please like, subscribe. If you're listening on audio, leave us a review. I really, really do appreciate it. And we'll be back tomorrow, Tuesday, that is, with another episode of the Chronicles of Aguna. Perhaps we'll select a tactical element from this game or an individual performance to really deep dive into. I'm working from home tomorrow, which means I have so much more time to sit and plan a nice in-depth podcast. I'm really, really looking forward to doing that. Subscribe, share, all the rest of it. And I will see you all on Tuesday later on in the day for something more. Any excuse to wax lyrical about the mighty Arsenal. Until the next one, take care of yourselves. Good night, everybody. Thank you.